Welcome to Relationship Matters. This is a mental health podcast where two relational psychotherapists dive into topics that you actually want to know more about. My name is Jason.
And I'm Carling.
And we're all about improving connection.
And enhancing relationships.
Hi.
Hi. It's been a while, eh?
It's been a minute.
It's okay. It's totally okay.
Yeah.
So why don't we get started in letting everyone know what we're doing?
Yeah. So Carling, in the time that we haven't been here, what's new?
Yeah, we decided that, you know, in 2022, we're going to blend our Ask Us Anything that we would usually do on Instagram, where we would answer, you know, questions that people had, then they could submit to us anonymously. So we thought, okay, let's keep that going, but actually let's integrate that into our monthly podcast episodes and actually still invite guests, awesome therapists that we know, to join us in sharing their wisdom on the questions that are asked. Did I miss anything, Jason?
Absolutely. Not really, no.
They said exactly absolutely it. I missed
Ask
something.
Us anything. Absolutely, you missed everything. No, that's it. Ask Us Anything on Instagram is now this. You, if you're listening to this in the car or anywhere else, you can hear our voices, but there's also a video component to this. So you can actually see what this looks like. And if you're watching this, you see that there are three people on the screen and not two. So to that, because I got permission to do this. Who's this fish?
Hi.
You, Amanda.
I'm Amanda.
Tell us a little bit about Amanda. Yeah.
So I joined you guys in January at Relationship Matters as an independent contractor, which I am really enjoying. So for me, I am, you know, I'm passionate about couples work, relational work, all things emotionally focused therapy. So I'm excited to be here and connecting with Carling and Jason.
Awesome. We're so glad that you're able to make the time and actually want to be here with us. We really appreciate it.
Yes, and for joining our team. You've just been an absolute rock star therapist. For both individuals and relationships and some youth. And it's been amazing to watch how much of a contribution you've been to Relationship Matters. So forever appreciative that you joined our team.
Thank you. Thank you.
100%. So shall we get this started?
I think we shall. Yeah. So we have been so lucky that people who follow our Instagram account and maybe other, you know, our website have been sharing with us some questions they have, some wonderings they might have and want our perhaps advice or our wisdom in answering those questions. So to get us started, I will, I'll bring up one of those questions if that's okay with you too.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right.
So while you do that, let me just remind everyone for a quick second.
Yes.
We do this all the time. So the same way that you would submit your questions when it came to the Ask Us Anything on Instagram, you can still submit your questions anonymously. Everything's on the link in our bio on our Instagram account. So just follow Relationship Matters Therapy. Click that button, submit your questions. We actually don't know who you are, so you could talk about anything big and scary or anything in between.
Love it.
Go for it, Carling.
Awesome. So first question here is, this person is asking for our suggestions on cultivating compassion for someone who has opposing views or values. So in other words, how to perhaps be understanding, be compassionate for someone we might not agree with on important things.
It's very timely, that question. I think very timely. Yeah. Do either one of you want to start?
You can go ahead.
Can I say personally? Is that okay?
Yeah, of course.
I had an experience recently of this. I won't like dive into the details of it. But I was surprised at like the lack of maybe like anger that I felt. Like it was a topic that I definitely feel like in the past I would normally get angry with. If you know, and like the opposition was kind of coming at me like this is wrong. But I didn't feel that way. And I do think it's just being like very secure in like what I believe and why I think so, and like not owning other people's like kind of
Shit.
stuff that they're throwing at you, right? If they're not, yeah. Okay, it's okay to say that. Yeah. Yeah, owning their shit. Where, and also, you know, it's like I can provide the education if needed, but also knowing that, like, you know, if I've done that, that's then their responsibility to either continue educating themselves or continue believing what they believe, which is totally, you know, I mean, I want to say okay, but when it comes to maybe harming other people, then that's another kind of topic where we can, for me at least, I feel like my roots are like pretty stuck in this, in what I believe. So yeah, I think part of it is just like that, knowing like what's mine to carry and like what's theirs and like providing the information if needed, and okay, you can do what you want with that. So I don't know if that kind of resonates, but when I think of that, I can think of a recent example where I was surprised myself, like, wow, if this was a year ago, I think I would have been like really heated about this, where I just felt very calm and like, here's the, like, I'm secure in me and here it is, and there you go. You can do what you will with that. So yeah, I don't
Oh,
know.
cool. So it sounds like a pretty significant.
It
Oh,
kind of
sorry.
sound
Go ahead. Go ahead, Jason.
go for it. Go for it. Because we're no, here's exactly what just happened. Carling and I became therapists at the same time because we were just going to reflect back exactly what we just heard. That's
So
what would have
true,
just happened, right?
right? Yeah, we're not usually sitting in the same room
Carling
together, are
twins.
we, Jason?
True.
when we're
No.
curious.
So funny.
What I was going to ask, and maybe
Yeah.
this is what Jason was going to ask too, is just what changed for you? Because it seemed like, you know, a while back, that would have been a very different experience. And you said something like angry or heated. And I'm just
Yeah.
so thrilled to know, you know, what is different for you that allows you to perhaps be in a more grounded space when you're experiencing that opposing view.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's just the like the understanding of like what is, say, my or another person, right? Their, you know, belief system, and like you're allowed to have that. But I'm gonna like be secure in mine. And like I feel very confident in this and in myself too, right? I think probably like a level of just like security with like your view of something and another person's view. Yeah. And I think also maybe the like level of closeness that you feel maybe to the topic, like in the sense of, I mean, if I could speak candidly, like it was, we were talking about like the harm that certain religious institutions can cause, which I'm like very proactive of like sharing because of my own experiences and things like that. So for me, I'm like very, now that I'm further away from that life when I was like a part of religious institution. So for me, it can be like, okay, there's so much space now that I don't feel like this like anger towards it, and knowing like, yeah, this is my experience and other people's experiences, and if you're not comfortable with that, that's okay. But yeah, I think just like the security in myself and being like, yeah, the confidence maybe in
That
who I
makes
am and my
sense.
experiences, and yeah. Yeah.
It's really cool.
I'm also hearing you talking about though, Amanda, that there would have been some harm that you would have experienced, and then through that harm, some healing that you would have gone through
Exactly, yeah.
yourself to be able to get some of that distance, to get to that security, to get to that calmness. Because it's quite striking to see to think once upon a time, here's how I would have done things, and whoa, I'm surprising myself that I'm not, which is lovely. And I'm sure in sort of looking at that to then say, okay, cool, good for you. How are you doing that though? And it sounds like that's exactly what you were doing, is to get to that place, is it would have required some level of healing or self-reflection or something for you to make peace with that hurt. Is that
For
right?
sure. Yeah, totally. Bang on. Yeah. You said it much more eloquently than I. That's exactly it.
Fair.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So where my mind goes with that is just thinking of the question is how do you or how can you hold some level of compassion towards yourself or towards another person, particularly when there's some tension in different positions that you hold. I mean, without naming it, we have heard and have seen a lot of oppositional viewpoints as of late. So what I'm hearing is that I wonder if in experiencing that, do you really need compassion, or in experiencing some of that tension, let's try to understand that a little bit more. Wondering what that sort of tension may be all about, wondering where that person may be at, understanding what's part of what's informing their position that is very different from mine, as opposed to proving that their position is just wrong, because that's really never going to get you anywhere.
I really see what you're saying here, Jason, and I that's where my mind went in reading this question, was just like maybe addressing what wounds are coming up that are activated when someone's holding a different view than you are. And I think there's times when differences feel very bridgeable and understandable. It's like, yeah, okay, you like pizza, I like sushi, big deal, right? And then there's ones that are, closer to your heart, perhaps activating, brushing upon wounds that haven't been quite healed yet. And the way that I've personally, what I found helpful is when I get activated and I feel that heat, I'm like, oh, this is a good indicator that I've got a path of healing to take on for myself. And I need to do that before I can come back to that conversation from a grounded place. So I set sort of boundaries on myself and in that connection of like, I want to stay connected with you, but can we just take some space from that topic? Right? I want to sit with the people that have opposing views and that aggravate some wounds of mine. And until I can get more understanding, more compassion for why I'm heated, I don't go back to that, because I don't think I can go from an understanding, compassionate place until I've been there with myself yet. Right? It's interesting. It's different though, as a therapist, somehow I can put my stuff. I don't know what happens, how I can do that. I can put my stuff elsewhere when I'm working with clients and they hold opposing views than I do, right? Sure, it might be there under the surface, but it just, for some reason, I can compartmentalize that and open, like have an open heart, open mind to their views and to why that view, if it makes sense to explore therapeutically, why they hold that view. Do you two find that when working with clients that might hold opposing views, that it's perhaps maybe easier to access compassion for them versus your personal life?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
So how do you think you two do that? Because I'm still trying to figure that out. Maybe it's just a role I take and I don't know, something's different, but I'm wondering how do you two do that professionally versus personally different?
Probably
You want to go?
the positive, like unconditional positive regard. That's what I'm thinking. Like that's like the lens in which I'm connecting with my clients. Would love if I did that elsewhere as well, but I think just that like professional like line versus that personal line, there is for me such a difference. And it's not to say that sometimes some things could activate. And I might seek supervision and talk about that, but nothing that would be, I would say, like concerning. I think it's just that professional line, with what, there's this human being in front of me that's seeking support. And I'm here to just come alongside their process, rather than like teach them or educate them, like, no, you're wrong or right or whatever. Just like knowing my place.
Right.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, because for me it's like to borrow some of Carling's favorite language, is that there's different parts of me that get activated in different environments, right? So we're thinking of when I'm stepping into the role of a therapist helping clients, there's a lot of stuff there already that I won't go into. But ultimately, I recognize that I'm stepping into that particular environment. So the clinician side, or that part of me, is what's there and allows me to be open and compassionate and understanding. At the same time, though I am a therapist, I'm not a therapist 24/7.
Yeah,
it's a part of who it is that I am, right?
That's right.
So I'm also a partner. I'm also a friend. I'm also a business partner. Mm-hmm. I'm also just a family member, like whatever. Mm-hmm. There's all of these different pieces that make up who it is that I am, which I think is what invites that difference of coming into these therapeutic spaces to hold some compassion for clients. And perhaps finding it a little bit more challenging to do that in other roles or in other facets, because that comes with other parts of ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe things that make us more vulnerable, or maybe things that we actually have space to disclose, right? Because as a clinician, my goal, I won't speak for both of you, but my goal is certainly to make clients feel comfortable. Yeah. So there's, you're going to have to kind of like me. And so I am working that angle at the very beginning, because that's kind of what makes therapy work, according to research. So given that that's how I approach it, I'm glad that clients feel comfortable knowing full well, I'm never going to be your friend. I'm never going to go to the bar and have a drink with you. Mm-hmm. We're never going to kiki cuckoo kaka afterwards. Like none of that's going to ever happen, because I'm not your friend. I'm not your friend. I'm not your family member. I'm not anything other than your therapist, which is here to help you. Right.
Yeah.
So this takes me to boundaries a little bit. Mm-hmm. And running back to that question of how do you become compassionate when there's oppositional views? Hey, I wonder how helpful boundaries may be for you in those spaces. Say how much of your energy are you willing to spend in that environment versus not, and how much of that do you want to protect?
Yeah.
Does that make sense to me.
Totally. And it's definitely what I was, you know, relates back to what I was saying of how I heal when that happens is setting that concrete boundary with that person, that I'm not ready yet to have the connection I want to have with them about that piece. Right. I think we're also talking about, being aware of what role we play in that person's life and what role they play in our lives too, to help us understand what is feeling threatened when we are not able to be compassionate and understanding towards each other. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's with my best friend. They're like, whoa, I didn't know we had such different views of this. Is this threatening to, you know, the sustainability of our friendship? How scary that can be. And just to give some examples of what wounds could be activated, fear of loss, maybe, you know, when that comes up. And I think it's important for all of us to be insightful and to reflect on, why am I so heated in this, right? And how most of us, if not all of us, really just want to be seen and understood, really heard, right? And how in that, you know, having compassion for each other is allowing the other person to feel seen and heard by us, maybe cared for by us. So until you can get to that place where you feel like you can hold your own pain while also hear the pain of another person, I don't think you'll be able to have that compassion that you desire. So you have to do your own healing first, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Carling, as you were talking, this came to mind, is this idea of expectations, right? So I'm thinking in feeling that level of, let's call it anger. So when you're feeling angry, right, and you're activated in that way, in hearing someone else saying something completely oppositional to you, how to be compassionate would be first for you to understand, where is that anger coming from? Right? And really be self-reflective there. For me, here's what that would say is, if you had to, and if you wanted like a quick old thing to like a tangible takeaway here, assume this, that your anger is coming from a place because you are expecting something and they are not meeting your expectations. That's why there's something here that is pissing you off. So what are your expectations of the other person? Why are those expectations of this other person? Are they always the expectations of the other person? Do you hold those expectations for yourself? Where is this anger coming from? Mm-hmm. Understanding that, assuming it may be fueled by expectations and noticing your expectations, however reasonable or not they may be, doesn't change the fact that they're not being met by you, like, or for you, right? Mm-hmm. And so because they're not being met, of course you're going to be pissed. And do I want to be compassionate towards you? No. Why? Because fuck you. Like, that's exactly what's going to be happening, right? I'm upset because you're not understanding. There's a part of me that feels that you need to be understanding of this. How could you not understand this? So another part of me assumes that you ought to. Where's that coming from?
Yeah.
That's the piece for me to help bridge that gap a little bit closer to self-compassion or just holding compassion in general.
Makes a lot of sense.
I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, because I just think going back to Amanda's point of like how she's really been able to build that sense of security, maybe safety within her own system that then allows her space to be compassionate and understanding with others who have opposing views. Well, you know, sometimes we can project, oh, you don't understand, you don't value, you don't get me. But is that a reflection of actually we're not getting understanding, showing love to ourselves? Is there like an insecurity within ourselves that needs to be attended to when we, you know, our protective system's like, no, that's you, that's your fault, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of work I do with clients, as I'm sure you do too, is building that inner sense of safety and security in our own systems. By us, not depending on others to do that for us, right? So I think I think like what you're saying, Jason, really lines up, reflects back what Amanda was sharing too. Any last thoughts about this piece
this before is such we a move great on? Question
I love that question.
I just appreciate the question. I just appreciate it. It's good. It's a really good one.
Awesome. All right, well, I do have a next one here. And what this person's asking is just that, you know, the mask mandates and vaccination passports, there's a lot of changes that are going on, a lot of things that are being lifted, I see, on, you know, COVID pandemic and how that is really uncomfortable for this person. But then, like, they don't have control. They're saying they don't have control over these changes. Right. And don't really know how to make sense of how to kind of, like they're saying, like exist with these changes when it feels so early. Mm-hmm. These changes are happening so early. I think, you know what, I think they didn't put like a huge question mark here, but I think what they're asking is just how to make sense of this or how to maybe manage what's not in their control, even though it's so, so distressing to them or uncomfortable.
I have a thought.
Please go.
I also want to make space because I know that I was taking up
some time before I go. Okay. Go for it, Jason.
All right. So here's where I take that is focusing where it is that you don't have control. I think that in and of itself is going to be distressing, right? If you're fixated on the things that you have no influence on. Of course it's going to suck because you have no influence on it. You have no control over it. You can't really do anything about it. And let's think about how you can't do anything about it, how there's nothing you can do about it, and do that more and more and more. That sucks. That feels really, really heavy, right, to try to hold on to. So perhaps the first thing would be, I mean, not to overstate it, whatever the word is, but not to minimize it, but stop fixating on what you can't control. Just stop. I know it's easier said than done. But stop that and shift that energy elsewhere, right? Shift it towards, well, if that's what you can't control, cool, it sucks, I know. What can you control? Perhaps there's going to be a part of you that's going to cloud that judgment that says there's nothing. I'm like, no, that's that is an absolute term, which is crap. No, you can control. You've decided, you've controlled and have made the decision to wake up this morning. You've controlled and decided to make the decision to get out of bed, to go to work, to get there on time, to take a shower, to eat. You've made the decision to stay in bed. You've made the decision to stay at home. You've made the decision to skip your shower, to skip your food. Like, you've made these decisions, right? Those are things that are in your control. They absolutely are. Just as much as thinking about how much exposure you have to triggering things. So how much news are you consuming relative to just how distressed do you feel? If you noticed high distress and high consumption, then let's maybe pivot that a little bit and see what difference that makes. I mean, I could keep going, but the gist really is like, stop thinking about what you can't control, because you're really going to start dwelling on that. Shift that over into the things that you can, right? So the mandate, whether there is one or not, you can't control. You can still decide whether or not you wear a mask. You can decide whether or not you are around a lot of people. You can decide this. Right. And even if there's a part of you that feels forced into it, you can decide whether you keep physical distance or not. You can decide how much time you're exposed to those environments that don't feel the most comfortable. There's a lot of things that you have a lot of control over.
Yeah.
It's just not going to be control in the ways in which you would love this to look like, because that's going to always be different for every single one of us.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense.
And that's my TED Talk.
I'm glad I got to be front row.
Yes.
You know, what you were saying, Jason, makes sense to me in what might be soothing to the person's protective system. And so what I mean by that is, I suspect there's quite a few of us whose protective system is feeling very activated by these changes. You know, can be very activated when we're feeling like we don't have as much control as what feels comfortable. Can be activated by the not knowing what's going to happen next, you know, with COVID and these changes. And so what I was hearing from you, Jason, is that in the model that I work from, IFS, is attuning to these parts of the protective system, hearing, you know, the ways in which they're distressed, these parts of them, and how, what kind of protective strategies they are using. And sometimes a protective strategy is just sort of wallowing in the, oh my gosh, I don't have any control. Sometimes protective strategies work really well and help us. Sometimes they don't. Right. Mm-hmm. Some of them are frozen in time when that was something that was helpful, but no longer is, perhaps in adulthood. And so that suggestion that you were offering, Jason, I can see that being incredibly soothing for people who have parts of them that need to feel like they have more control at times when if that feels threatened. And trauma responses are often related to feeling like we don't have control. It's usually what occurs during trauma. We lose some sense of agency or control. Perhaps it's taken away. I wouldn't be surprised if a fair number of people are feeling in a way re-traumatized by these decisions. There's probably people that have been felt re-traumatized by other decisions the government has made around COVID and vaccinations. And so I think attuning to, like, how does this relate to my potential trauma history? And what does my system need, my protective system need to feel safer in the here and now? And how do I feel safer in a way that I can control, not in a way that other people can help me? Because that's not, unfortunately, that's not within our control. I don't know if that made any sense because I'm talking from pure IFS right now, but yeah.
No, that makes total sense to me.
Okay. Yeah, same. It was kind of similar to what I was thinking from like the more EFT lens of like, what's the trigger here right now? And like, what's coming up in terms of like an emotion and, you know, what's the meaning that you, you know, that you make in those moments when you feel that, you know, anxiety that's coming in terms of, you know, these changes that are coming up. And then too, like, is there anything from the past that's kind of being triggered here? Can we like explore that and kind of go into your experience around like change, and is there any trauma, and any unmet needs as well? That was what was kind of coming up for me. So I think similar, right, in that, you know, that self-protection, we do these things, you know, for good reason, but then going back to Jason's point, right, like if we do just focus on, you know, the aspect of what we, you know, need to be or want to control but can't, right, then that's going to be exhausting. But there's probably a good reason why that person, or why, you know, we're all in this together right now, right, why we would do those things. I think the protection piece is really important to think about, right, what's being activated.
Definitely, which I think we've been having years of that collectively, you know, our protective systems being highly activated, and sometimes bringing very strong conflict with each other, going back to, you know, that previous question, and understanding, I'm sensing this person's protective system, not their necessarily their heart and soul, right? But their protective system is being activated, as is mine.
True.
How do we unblend from that so that we can reconnect? Yeah. Cool. Any other thoughts before I think we have time for like maybe one more. Any thoughts, last thoughts about that piece? Maybe two more.
I think we have time for one more.
One more.
One more question. To get into it. But no, it's really that, like, just at least understand that with how things are changing, things are changing, period. That's always been true, with or without a pandemic, with or without world events. So that piece is constant. So knowing that there may be discomfort for you that you may be experiencing with these changes, at minimum, all I'm asking, just know that that discomfort is absolutely valid. You're allowed to feel that. That makes total sense for you to be uncomfortable, right? There was, just think about it. Given that this question is coming from a place of mask mandates and COVID-related changes, at the beginning of the pandemic, at the beginning of 2020, no one thought that that was actually going to be a thing, right? So overnight, we stepped into radical change. Right. Where I don't know about you guys, but I totally remember the almost like that day that the world just turned the off switch. Right. And there's no traffic, no one's outside. Everything was like a ghost town. There was so much silence, and there was so much discomfort. There was so much fear because we just didn't know. Right. And then just seeing these images of airports empty, public spaces empty, no one is there, nothing on the shelf. Even in me saying this, and whoever's listening to it, that this in and of itself could be activating. Right. You could be feeling uncomfortable the more that I sort of bring this up. That's okay. It's valid. You're allowed to feel that. It's uncomfortable. You were uncomfortable then. Settled into it over a period of 2+ years now. Something else is changing, so of course it'll be activating. Of course, right? It's different. You don't know what that's going to look like anymore. So just know that it makes sense. It makes sense. And you can hold on to the fact that it's just uncomfortable, or shift it towards, yes, it makes sense. Yes, this sucks. Yes, this is uncomfortable. And now that I know that, what can I do here? Where can I actually exert some level of influence? Be it where I go, who I see, what I do, what I wear, how long I'm there, et cetera.
Perhaps how do I make this like 5% less distressing? Maybe. But also validating, or even 1%, like, right. But also validating, like, this isn't, I'm not silly for, you know, feeling this way. Like, I think that internal validation is key here. I'm glad you brought that up. Shall
last
we
question?
Let's do the last question. I've got one here. And this one's good. It's really in line with EFT, I think. So I'm excited to hear your guys' wisdom about this. So this person's asking, you know, I've been doing a lot of work around my anxious attachment style in therapy and also self-growth work, they're saying. They're saying, although there's lots of work being done, that's still very activated as I've re-entered the dating scene. And I'm trying to find a secure connection with somebody, but finding that really hard. Do you have any additional suggestions for me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm waiting for my attachment folks to chat. Like, I have two as well, but I know that you're like the expert. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Go for it, Jason.
Yeah. Actually, Amanda, did you want to start? Not to put you on the spot here, but
no, yeah, I definitely have some thoughts.
Okay, go, Amanda. Yeah, please.
The thing that came up for me right away that I think I share with my clients and, you know, beyond as well, is right that the things that get broken in a relationship often are the things that get healed in a relationship. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you're more anxiously attached, there's a good reason for that. I'm sure there was some sort of, you know, who knows, trauma experience, mm-hmm. maybe betrayal, just like not like a lack of trust happening. Right. So I use the example of trust in those scenarios. Right. So if you have had some sort of betrayal or that lack of trust in your past that has maybe, you know, shifted your attachment style to be more anxious, which is very adaptive, right? There's reason for that. You know, then you're seeing, okay, this actually isn't so helpful for my relationships if I have this more anxious attachment. Mm-hmm. So then now entering into that dating scene, there's the potential, right, where that anxiousness could, you know, come alive in those relationships, but to actually create that security, to have that trust again, you know, you have to, you can, and I encourage like that inner work and doing that, but then also mm-hmm. how can I learn to trust again if I'm not putting my trust in another person, right? So there's like the discomfort of that because mm-hmm. there's, you know, we're opening ourselves up to risk. You know, if we're, you know, opening ourselves to a new relationship and they kind of, are another example of why I need to be more anxious in a relationship or whatever it mm-hmm. looks like, you know, that's like a blow to that, right? The only way that we can really create a secure attachment with someone is if we risk and if we're vulnerable and, you know, we need trust to be able to do that. So, you know, if someone has that lack of trust, the only way I would say that we can really fully get that back is if we heal what was broken in a relationship or relationships or whatever that looks like mm-hmm. and that can take some figuring out, unfortunately, right? Because it can kind of, you know, there are, of course, right, just, you know, especially in like the dating scene these days, it's like potential for anxious attachment or avoidant attachment, like that's just like a breeding ground for that. So I would say I mean, fortunately and unfortunately, it's about, you know, just taking those risks and learning to trust with another safe other, right? It has mm-hmm. to be that safe person that mm-hmm. you find. And that's like one thought that I have about that. I have some others, but I'll pass it over to you, Jason.
Okay. I really like the finding that self, the safe other mm-hmm. in order to be more likely to take these risks. Cause I fully agree with what you're saying, and what you're saying makes total sense to me. I'm on that same page. I guess as you were saying that, Amanda, my mind was going to, in hearing you say finding that safe other, my mind was talking to me and was like, well, yeah, isn't that what dating is all about? Uh-huh. That's called dating, trying to find that safe other, right? Yeah. Which that process to find the safe other to take risks is in and of itself risky.
Exactly.
You'll find safe and unsafe people along the way.
Yeah.
And if safe is a word that gets overused, I'm going to just replace it with comfort. Because that's really what safety embodies, right? It's just to be comfortable. Yeah. And we're talking about a lack of safety is a lack of comfort.
Yeah.
Oftentimes at an emotional level, right? Yeah. Which makes sense. So, hey, how do we get comfortable? Well, we expose ourselves to people. How do you, and what do you do when you're in the midst of that exposure? You get to know them, right? Mm-hmm. So this is more, to me, in a way, in part, yes, a lot of inner work. And this is also one where it's like learning to trust yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Learning to trust your gut, that gut feeling, learning to trust that you have some innate wisdom within you anyways, that somewhere along the way, perhaps you've learned or you've been taught because you've had to no longer listen to what your body already knows. So learning that perhaps there's something here that my spidey senses are tingling and I don't know what it means, whether there's danger or excitement, but listening to it, not disregarding it, learning to trust yourself. Because dating is just, honestly, it's dating is this really long and fun interview process.
That's what dating is. You said fun.
Right?
Can be.
Carly, look, if your dates weren't the not fun dates, are you still seeing those people?
No, I just think the process, formerly anxious attached person here. Well, sometimes totally current anxious attached person here. It does feel incredibly uncomfortable, but I do like that twinge of why not view it as fun and something I've worked on to create more secure attachment within self, right? Is to create that. I think it's very legitimate to say safety within. Right? Comfort ain't good enough for me within. It has to feel safe, meaning if I get what feels like abandonment by someone I'm going on dates with, because, you know, they ghost me or whatever, I need to feel safe that I'm not going to be thrown for a month and can't go to work, right? Because that's often attachment wounds really disrupt that sense of internal safety. Comfort with others makes sense to me, but not trying to find that internal safety through that person or through that relationship, through that safe other, right? I think it needs to come within first. And perhaps that's what that person is working on in therapy and elsewhere, to then, do the vulnerability of discomfort. Because, dating is a very uncomfortable process for some of us. That's my two cents. I'd love to hear more from you, Amanda. You said you had another point.
Yeah, and I think as Jason was sharing, right, about like trusting your gut, I think that's something with anxious attachment that often can go a bit awry. And I saw like a infographic on probably like Instagram or something recently, and it just like clicked for me when I saw it. It said, it was saying, you know, like, I mean, I personally don't refer to people as toxic, but this is what it said. It said toxic people like are going to find, you know, everyone. It's not like you are attracting toxic people, but the real question you need to be answering is like, why am I letting them stay? And I think like in terms of this anxious attachment, like that is the question to ask yourself. Like if someone is kind of perpetuating that anxiety because they're not available to you and it's causing harm or whatever, that you know, lack of comfort and safety, like why, you know, like the question to ask yourself, like, why are we letting ourselves, or why are you letting yourself like stay in that? And then exploring and you know, when we think of love, like you love the person, you want it to work, like, of course, I get that. But what parts of yourself are you abandoning to like kind of hold on to something, that is just kind of continuing that cycle for you.
I really love that you mentioned that.
I think that's a great self question.
What parts of you are you abandoning? Which is usually with you know, anxious attachment is fear of abandonment. Not for everyone, but that's a primary theme. And often it's because we abandon ourselves, right? We don't trust our guts, we don't look at the red flags, you know. We prioritize other people's wellness over our own, right? So it's very much a theme of abandonment of self that can't feel safe within the system, right? I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah.
Any last thoughts?
I think as I'm
hearing, go ahead, Jason.
Yeah, as I'm hearing you sort of recap this, Carling, it kind of, for me, it highlights that a lot of this is also going to be informed by the way that you see yourself as that individual, right? So the story that I'm trying to not use clinical words right now because I know exactly what I mean. So like that story that you have, that you think that you've written, that other people read, your autobiography that other people pick up and read about you, I think that in part is going to inform the perhaps a large part, what am I abandoning when it comes to those important parts of self or concepts of self, right? Let's maybe even thinking about that as like, I don't know, values, right? What what values that are really important to you that you kind of hold really close because they're significant.
Yeah.
What are you letting go of? And to get to the why are you doing that? It's like, I wonder how is it, like, what does your autobiography say about you? To then say like, obviously it makes sense. That's why you're doing it, because it means that if you're just a very difficult person, you're just very hard to be around. You're just very needy. You need way too much. You're too much for people. So you better learn how to settle and be grateful that someone's in your life, because nobody wants you because you're not worth wanting.
Yeah,
that is going to be part of that autobiography, quote unquote, that I'm speaking about, how it is that you see yourself, or rather how you believe others may perceive you. Yeah. All of that, the view of self, that stuff is certainly what's going to be informing, like, what am I ditching here, and why is it that I'm ditching it?
Very well said.
Yeah, that's so good.
Cool.
Amazing. Well, I think we're at time. It was a lot of fun. Amanda, we really appreciate you coming here and sharing your brilliance with us. And again, being a part of the Relationship Matters Therapy Center team. And Jason, how should we wrap today up?
I guess the way to wrap up today really is just thanking you both for your time, your wisdom as therapists, because you're both equally brilliant. Genuinely appreciate that. And equally to everyone who was able to submit questions, it takes a lot to come to terms with that as your question, whatever your question is, let alone to share it, yes, anonymously, to hopefully create some sense of safety. But it's still scary, because once it's out there, it kind of becomes out there. So thank you for your bravery and willingness to actually share your questions and curiosities and discomforts. We always appreciate it. And all of your questions are always welcome. So link is in our Instagram page at Relationship Matters Therapy. Hopefully this was fun. Let us know what you think, whether you like the video side of it or not. Let us know.
Yes.
We'll take your points.
Take
your points and adjust accordingly.
Yeah, exactly. And you'll be able to find the YouTube channel link where you can see our lovely faces. If you're listening right now, you're welcome to hop on our Instagram account to find that link. And please, we very much welcome your questions ongoing. So please send them our way, and we'll be doing more of this throughout the year and answering them through our podcast. Yeah. Okay.
And if you wanted to connect with us, relationshipmatterstherapy.com is our website. All of our contact information is there. All of our social information is there. The podcast is there too. So www.relationshipmatterstherapy.com.
I feel like I should have got a lighter out there.
All right, wrap us up, Carling. Wrap us up.
Well, until next time. We are working away at improving connection and enhancing relationships. Take care.
Take care, everyone. Bye.